Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz. Arthur Schwartz, of course, the food maven, joins us every Monday. We broadcast during the weekend and also after our 12 noon newscast during the week as well. Let's welcome in Arthur right now. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and it's a nice morning here. I mean, it's spring. It's April.
Yeah.
There should be showers. There's a song about that.
There is.
Yeah. I have a new stove, as probably everybody knows by now who listens to this program, and I'm playing with it. I mean, I'm testing it out. I'm testing it. I've found two, one major, one minor problem, but I'm doing a different food. The only thing I haven't done yet is any stovetop thing that's going to make a lot of smoke, because the range hood has yet to come in. And I don't have exterior ventilation anyway, but it does make a difference. I see a small difference, but a difference. So I've been cooking things that, on top of the stove, there are five burners on this stove, and each one of them seems to be different. The two that I favor is interesting. One of them, the right-hand front burner, is on my old stove. I always say, oh, if only this burner was stronger, because that was like my least BTUs on the old stove. On this one, it's way stronger, but not the strongest. And I'm finding it's a really handy heat source for most things. I sauteed over it. I actually did a little deep frying over it. And one of the things I tried this week was the deep frying, which I haven't done in quite a while. But Bob, my roommate, my cooking audience, was craving fish and chips. Although I can deal with that, I can do it without the chips because we're on this, very, very low carbohydrate diet. So I didn't want to make a beer batter either, because that is a high-carb thing. But I thought, well, some flour won't hurt us. So I made, if I was Neapolitan anyway, I was going to say Italian, but I'm not sure this expression is used all over Italy, but I would say it was pesce indurati, gilded fish. And what gilded meant in this case is dipped in flour and egg, and then flour again. I measured out, because this is what I do for a living, I measured out the flour to see how many carbs I really was getting into this fish dish, and it was pretty low, because I measured out a half a cup of flour, and I didn't use all of it at all, maybe half of it in the end. A quarter of a cup of flour for was over a pound of cod. I cooked cod. That's a very good fish and chips fish. It's very inexpensive too, compared to other fish. Nothing is inexpensive these days. Certainly not any fish. But anyway, it's a good bland fish for fried fish. And it was great in Dorati, and I found out that that right-hand front burner on high is the perfect temperature for keeping my cast iron skillet at a nice, perky frying temperature. I happen to like frying. I was mentioning this to somebody the other day, and somebody who's a very good cook, and she said, I hate frying. I said, it requires a lot of attention. Here you are dealing with fat that could really burn you badly and could pop up into your face at any moment, depending on what you're cooking. And it requires you to concentrate on what you're doing. It's not something you just throw in the oven and forget and come back in a half an hour. So I enjoy doing it because I find it meditative. You have to cut all other things out of your consciousness while you're frying. And I always think of, I'm going to say an old lady, but she's deceased already, She would be in her early hundreds by now, maybe even hundred teens. She lived to be very old, and she was the queen of friars in a town in southern Italy, in Campania. When I met her, she was already very old, and she used to sit in the lobby of her family-owned hotel, and with blankets over her legs and a heating, an electric heater pointed at her legs, and she always complained that the legs were that way from standing and crying for 60 years. You know, now her family was affluent, and they owned a hotel and a restaurant and this and that, but for most of her life, she stood at a fryer. Anyway, so frying was great. The thing that has not been great is I sautéed something the other night, and I was making a little bit of sage butter. This was slices of scallopini, and I was going to sauté them in sage butter. And so I put the sage and the butter in the skillet, and I noticed that the butter pooled slightly at one end of the skillet, which means the stove is not perfectly level. That's an easy thing to deal with, because there are little, I know, because I made, this was really a bad thing with my installation, but the installer did not come with the level. I don't know, what do you call it? It's just called a level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I happen to have a level. It's too long to do the job the way it should be done, but I had to point out to him, I said right away, I looked at it, I said, this isn't level. And he said, oh, yeah, it is. I said, no, it isn't. And he got my level out, and I showed him where it was, and he adjusted it, but I don't think he adjusted it perfectly. In any case, that's an easy thing. The hard thing is, there are two functions for the, well, there's more than two functions for the oven, but the basic two functions are bake and roast. And on bake, nothing happens. I mean, the oven gets warm and the preheat light goes off, but it's not preheated and it's not at whatever temperature you set it at. So my first test of this was bacon. I put the bacon on a rack on a sheet pan. This is how I lately do bacon, instead of standing and frying it. And I put it in a cold oven, set the oven for 400, and in my old oven, it preheated somewhere in the middle there, and so it did spend a little time at 400. And after 20 minutes, the thin bacon I've been buying is perfectly cooked. I mean, other bacon may take a little longer or a little less, but that's pretty much the mark, 20 minutes. And I've done this in the old oven. I did this, I don't know, not dozens of times, but maybe scores of times, a lot of times. So I did that here, and after 20 minutes, the bacon was barely limp. I put it on roast at the same temperature, and I was able to cook it. So the next test was I bought a cake mix. I know some people are gasping. I told this to a friend, and she said, oh, my God, you bought a cake mix? I said, you know, I grew up with cake mixes. These days, you know, the problem with most cake mixes, but hardly all, is the flavoring. If you buy a high-quality cake mix, it's probably going to end up with at least a medium-quality cake. And the thing I love about cake mixes is that they're usually oil-based, and oil-based cakes have a particularly fine, moist crumb. I like that. In fact, I would say that a lot of people, when they taste butter-based cakes, actually miss the texture of an oil-based cake, because they perhaps too grew up on cake mixes. My mother bakes every once in a while, but usually it was cookies, And we had good, and I have the same attitude as my mother. We have good bakeries. Why bother baking a cake? I can't do it as well as the place around the corner. Anyway, so I did that, and it didn't work. Roasting is okay. Then I roasted some chicken thighs. I decided I wasn't even going to go to bake. I just put them in on roast. Now, according to my instruction booklet, which I have read over and over again now, by the way, guys who don't read instruction booklets, I never get. I don't understand that. I live with one who refuses to read the instructions. Although I did hear him say that he watched an instruction video on how to operate the dishwasher, which is more complicated than it seems at first. So anyway, over and over again, and I'm doing this right, according to the instruction book, bake is good for baking cakes. So I did that cake mix and I've made this mix before. It's a keto-friendly cake mix. I mentioned it a couple weeks ago as not to buy it. But I bought it not because it's delicious or because I'm on this diet and it fits the diet. I bought it because I made it recently in my other oven, and I knew that the instructions were perfect, that it really was going to be perfect after a half an hour. So after I decided I wasn't going to open the oven door, I let the oven preheat and then some. Now, another friend who I was fetching about the oven to said to me, as if I was born yesterday, now, you have to preheat your oven and then wait, because the preheating, she said, is only happening around the thermostat at the back of the oven. Of course, there are thermostats in other parts of other ovens, and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, the point is, I do this all the time. I never trust an oven is really preheated when it says it's preheated. So I always wait at least another 10 minutes after it says it's preheated. My last oven actually rang a beeper when it was preheated. This one has a light on the front that goes off when it's preheated. So after it was up to 350, I waited 10 minutes. I put in the cake. I didn't open the door. After 30 minutes, it was just a puddle of batter. Maybe melted slightly. I then put the same temperature, which is 350, on roast, and although I did not have the patience to fully bake this cake, it was baking just fine. After 20 minutes, it was almost done. And then I lost patience and took it out, and I knew the middle was going to be like pudding, but we just didn't eat the middle. We ate the caked edge, and almost immediately got terrible gas, so we're not eating that again. And that wasn't just me; it was both of us. I don't know what the ingredient is in this cake that gives us such bad stomach growling and gas. But I reported that before, and the fudge brownie keto mix was even worse. So that has more whatever ingredient it is, I guess. So I can't really grill anything or cook anything like a steak because I don't have a hood yet. At 9 o'clock this morning, or more like 9:30, he doesn't get in at 9, I'm going to call my appliance guy and tell him, you got to send somebody over here to, one, level the stove, and, two, find out why I'm not getting heat at 350 degrees, and also, where's my hood? So everything is coming in late. I understand that. You understand. If you order furniture now, you're lucky to get it in six months.
Yeah.
Oh, here's one that I only discovered this week. There is about to be a shortage of prosciutto. The shipments of prosciutto are not coming through from Italy. I buy either prosciutto di Parma or prosciutto San Daniele. San Daniele is not a brand. San Daniele is a place in northeast Italy, and their hams are exquisite. And Parma is an earthier flavored, perhaps slightly saltier ham. I prefer prosciutto di Parma again, it's not a brand, it's where it's from, Parma. But anyway, two of my stores have now been out of prosciutto for over a week. And at Whole Foods, I asked the young man behind the counter, was he ever getting prosciutto again? And he said, we don't know. And they actually have taken out even the display prosciutto from the display. So I'm, and my friend Kathy Coluccio, of the Coluccio brothers, and actually and a daughter, and so you know, it's Coluccio and Sons, but that's because Kathy was a very late in life child. It should say Coluccio and Sons and daughter. So Kathy told me just recently, like within the last couple of weeks, that there is a problem getting shipments from Italy. I have to call her today and see if prosciutto is among those things that are a problem. I'm curious to find out what else is.
You mentioned prosciutto, and I made something this weekend because I had a little bit. I bought some prosciutto from Le Bon's, and I mixed prosciutto with some cabbage that I had sautéed down with pork and onions, and then I put a little bit of grated Parmesan in it, and I stuffed it into Italian peppers. And then I covered it with tomatoes, and I put it in. And you know what, Arthur? It came out. It was
unbelievable. That sounds fabulous. Yeah. It really does. I would eat that in an instant. No, that does. I also made sausage and cabbage this week. Actually, yesterday. It started out. I didn't know. I had some really good sausage. And Italian sweet sausage. And I had a lot of cabbage to use up. I sent Bob for the cabbage, and he came back with like a 5-pound head of cabbage. I didn't want to discourage him from shopping, so I said, oh, that's beautiful. Anyway, so I have, and I shredded up a lot, and because it's hard to store a big head of cabbage like that. But I thought, well, this will keep a couple days in plastic bags. It was very handy yesterday. So it started out, I'm still playing with my new stove here. It started out I was going to make sausage and peppers. I had these nice peppers. But then I also had this beautiful eggplant. And I thought, you know what, instead of that, I'll do sausage with cabbage, and I'll cook the peppers somehow else. And the somehow else was going to be in like a ciambotta, a vegetable medley containing this eggplant, the two red peppers I bought, and these nice baby Vidalia onions, which I just bought because, I don't know, they look so pretty. So I wedged the onion but anyway, I opened up the eggplant, and I never saw this before. It was a firm, shiny eggplant. The calyx was green when I bought it. This was only 2 days later, so it should be still okay. If not, perfect, it's still going to be okay. And I opened it up, and the middle was rotten. Only the very middle. I decided not to cut around it, and I just tossed it, and I ended up with the onions and the peppers, and then I, to make it like a pepperonata, even though I had already cut the peppers in a different way, into like inch squares, which is not how I usually do pepperonata, I threw in some canned tomatoes, and gotta say, it was really delicious, salt and pepper, nothing else. And then I turned off the heat, figuring I'd reheat it later. Well, playing with my new stove, I apparently did not totally turn off the heat. I have to be careful with this. I had put it on super low, on a burner that goes to super low. And it was in a covered pot on this back burner on super low for at least a half an hour before I discovered that I had it on super low. And by that time, the peppers were mush, and the onions were pretty mushy, too. So even though I cut them into wedges so I could keep them intact and beautiful. Anyway, I decided I'd puree it, and we'd have it as soup. But after I pureed it, and I got to say, these peppers, which were, the label said greenhouse grown in Mexico. And by the way, I bought some fresh tomatoes that were also greenhouse grown in Mexico. And they were, and the tomatoes especially were, I like a summer tomato. I couldn't believe it. $2.29 a pound, not bad either. And the peppers, anyway, the peppers were really sweet. And we, and I ended up with this really delicious sauce, more than a soup. So in the end, I cooked my sausage. I browned the sausage. I put in my cabbage. And also, I didn't want to waste the greens from these vidalias. So I sliced them up and put them in the pot with the cabbage and the sausage. And I let it all steam together for about 40 minutes. And that we were going to eat it just like that. But then in the end, I put this this, you know, basically it's a pepper and tomato sauce over it, and it really, in a small way, was a good substitute for spaghetti with tomato sauce and pepper sauce. It was really good, and we have leftovers. So today I thought I would heat the leftovers in the oven, putting a lot of grated cheese on top.
Oh, yeah. That sounds good.
Anyway, the oven, you know, I'm still, as I said, playing with the oven. But I do want to test out some higher BTU burners today. And I'm not sure. I did roast asparagus, by the way, at my normal 450 for these fat asparagus, 10 minutes. Maybe I could have left them in another minute, but it was because the asparagus was so nice and fat. I told you the chicken thighs were, everything's coming out great on roast. Why isn't bake working? And one of the things that I did on top of the stove, because I can't create a lot of smoke, is I decided to make a pot of chili, which I've been aching for anyway and is totally on my diet, as long as I don't put the beans in. And the other day I thought, well, you know, maybe I should put in a few beans. In any case, the thing that was I lacked to make a good chili was chili, good chili powder. And I've been shopping all over for chili that is chili powder that is just chili. Most, if not almost all, that you can buy in a store have also cumin and oregano, if not salt and other things. I don't want garlic powder, whatever they call it. I don't want any dehydrated onion or whatever they call it. In any case, I remembered that my dear old friend Nika Hazelton, a great, great food writer and editor in her day, used to swear by Gebhardt's chili powder. So I looked it up. You can buy, I'm sure you can buy it in a store, but you can easily buy it online. She used to have to mail order it. We're talking 35, 40 years ago. She would mail order it from Texas. Now you can buy it probably anywhere. But, you know, it contains those things. So I'm not sure what was so wonderful about it. But I have made my own chili powder, and I was eager to do it again. So I, you know, I live in Brooklyn. You can buy almost anything you want in life in Brooklyn. And I can easily get great spices from any number of sources. And Mexican is one of them. There's a store down the street. I say it's down the avenue. It's in the car. It's less than 10 minutes away. It's about a mile away. But, you know, Brooklyn, Park Slope streets where you're bound to get stuck behind either a delivery truck, a moving truck, or just an inconsiderate driver who's parked in the middle of the street. Anyway, you get there, and I had every pepper that I could think of, dried pepper, Mexican pepper, chili pepper, and then some. I mean, some that I never heard of. So I bought three that I knew of and wanted, and I bought one that I never heard of, and I created my own chili powder simply by breaking off the stems of these dried chilies, letting the seeds fall out. I didn't want to put seeds in. Not every last seed. I mean, a few seeds won't hurt. And then I use, I have a spice grinder, this little $20 spice grinder. I probably had it for 20 years that I use for spices. And by the way, if you want to change spices between whatever, although I must say this one is almost entirely designated a chili spice grinder, mill, you can do that by, after brushing it out, you can't put it in the water, after brushing it out or rubbing it out with a paper towel, put in a tablespoon of sugar and spin the sugar in the grinder, and that will collect any residual oils that are there from the chilies or whatever other spice it was. Anyway, so my formula is 6 guajillo peppers. Now, they are a fruity tasting, but not very hot. They're medium hot pepper. 2 ancho pepper, 2 big ancho. And you open up a bag of anchos, you'll see there are different sizes, but most of them are fairly big, usually. So I use 2 big anchos. Now, anchos are rarely hot. They are a dried version of poblano, the green pepper that you can buy fresh in today in most supermarkets. But when they're ripe, they're red, and then they're dried. So they're dried red peppers, not spicy. Guajillo, not spicy. And then I put in 4 morito peppers. Now, I've never cooked with morito, but I go to a Mexican restaurant, hoping they're going to... Maybe they are already open, I should ask. They make ribs, short ribs, in a chili morito sauce, and I always love that sauce. So I bought that, and I put 4 moritos into my mixture here. And then this is one that I'd never heard of, costeño. Now, costeño is another name for something else. But all I needed to know that this was the pepper that they use in Oaxaca for the famous Oaxacan mole. So I put a couple of costeños in. I also, by the way, these peppers in my Mexican store were so inexpensive that I decided when I saw them that I was going to use them also for decoration in my new kitchen, which is to say I put them into clear jars, big jars, because it's a lot of peppers. And they're now on an open shelf. So I have these nice clear jars full of peppers. But you know what? This came out so good, I'm going to be making again soon. So that was it. I put those all in my grinder. Basically, I think it was 3 doses, so to speak. I made sure that they were all very mixed up well in my little jar that I keep it in. And for 2 pounds of meat, I used 1/4 cup. Of this chili powder. Saute an onion, a largish onion. I use olive oil, but you could use any oil, even just plain old vegetable oil. And then I had 6 large cloves of garlic, which I chopped coarsely, not even finely. When the onions were getting tender, I threw in the garlic and let that cook a few minutes. And then I threw in the 1/4 cup of chili powder, and two teaspoons only. I think next time I will use a tablespoon, but 2 teaspoons of cumin. And I let that cook in the oil with the onions for about a minute or so, that's all. And then I added in 2 pounds of ground beef, 80-20, 80 lean, 20 fat. We're not afraid of fat here. So you could do super lean if you want, but the texture's wrong for me. In any case, I cook that, breaking it up as I go. Actually, I break it up as I put it in the pot, but then I take my flat-end wooden spatula or the edge of a wooden spoon and break up the meat as it cooks over medium-high heat. And when all the raw meat is gone, I threw in a 28-ounce can of plum tomatoes that I crushed separately in a bowl and then put into the pot, and a tablespoon of oregano. I don't use Mexican oregano, but maybe I'll buy some next. I should have bought some the other day, but I have my Sicilian oregano, which does the trick. And eventually you have to add salt. You probably will not have to add pepper. That makes a medium hot, not hot at all, really, for me, chili. It only needs to simmer a half an hour, 45 minutes. If you cook it much longer, you can cook it a little longer. You look at the density of your chili. I may have overcooked mine a little bit the last time, and I ended up, when I reheated it, I ended up adding a little water, which is okay. I mean, it's just water. Anyway, if you want to make it hotter, you can. You could add hot chili, but you could also just add cayenne pepper. If some people want it hot and some don't, you can just put hot sauce on the table and add that to your chili. This is totally un-Mexican, by the way. Well, I was telling Irene, my Mexican housekeeper, about the recipe for this. She said, how do you make it? She was very suspicious. And I told her how. She said, well, I will try it. But I've tried other chilies, and I don't like it.
All right.
So I think she might actually like mine, because it doesn't have... And I garnished it, by the way, with avocado. We're really into avocado here. Some cubed avocado. Instead of a salsa, just some diced tomato, fresh tomato. Don't need salsa. It's already... I could have, because I have some nice fresh jalapenos. So if you want to make it salsa, just dice up some onion and jalapeno, and you got a salsa. And what else did we put? Oh, and sour cream.
Yeah. Sounds terrific.
That's not, you know, that I always say that's so American, but in fact it's not, because the Mexicans, of course, have a crema, which is very close to sour cream. Well, it is a kind of sour cream.
All right.
Anyway.
We'll follow the Odyssey of the Stove next week.
Yeah, well, this is you know, I'm cooking a lot because I missed cooking. I was out of commission here for a while. I was really sick of even the good takeout food.
All right. We'll speak to you next week, Arthur.
Take care, everybody. Have a great week.
Bye-bye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio. You'll also find him on robinhoodradio.com. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, in our interview section. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.